You want to go ahead and turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel. We'll start at the very end of chapter 17. Kind of a recap. Yesterday, I hope you didn't leave disappointed because I didn't spend a lot of time talking about the giant, the actual giant. I know that is the favorite part. And we're going to mention it just a little bit this morning. But it was on purpose. We did it that way. Something a little different. Now, the anointing of David and Goliath, that's easy. Jonathan is a little more challenging. Get a little more technical, a little deeper. Especially when you're coming up with a lesson. But the main thing about Jonathan and David was their friendship. And that's what we're going to look at this morning is friendship. And friendship in our lives as a Christian or as an aspiring Christian, being a friend is important. Having a friend is important, and that's what we're gonna take a look at. Maybe find some application that for us as we go through our normal week. But Goliath, we know that he comes out, he challenges David, and up to this point, who was David? He said he was a shepherd. David is going to go, and you'll hear me say this again, he's going to have a lot of things happen really fast in his life. He's going to go from basically being the least of his brothers to being a celebrity to then being a fugitive, all in the matter of just months, a few years. It's not going to take very long for his star to rise and then fall, especially with the king. But he faces Goliath. Goliath has challenged anyone in the Israelite army, and David couldn't stand it. He doesn't wait around. He goes and faces his giant. And we said he was very confident in the tools that he had. He was confident in the life that he lived up to that point, preparing him for this. We noticed that even Goliath tries to talk him out of the fight. He tells him, he says, you're not even supposed to be out here. And then David, we know, kills Goliath. And he kills him with a rock, which is not that shocking when you look back at the lion and the bear that he killed with a stick. So David has done some great things. And where we'll pick up with this story is Saul is asking Abner, who is this kid? You know, who's his parents? Who's his father? Now, it wasn't because he didn't know who David was. He'd already met David. He knew David. But he's about to take David away. He's going to take him and put him in his household. So that's what we'll pick up in our story this morning. But before we get into that, I want to share with you another story that I came across years ago. And it stuck with me. It's one of those I used to not be able to even tell it while I was standing up here. And it's crazy. I told you I'll talk to animals every now and then. Actually, it's probably a lot. But there was a dog. We're going to start out the story as a farmer. It's a farm dog. And we'll just call the dog, dog. There was also a chicken. We're going to call the chicken, chicken. And then there was the farmer. This farmer had this dog from the time he was a pup. The dog went everywhere. Wherever the farmer was, the dog, and you may have a dog like this. Every step the farmer made, the dog was there. And through the years, it was like the dog had kind of understood what the farmer wanted. And if you've ever had a really good hound or a really good cow dog, you know what I'm talking about. You'll spend the rest of your life trying to get one that's just as good when you finally find that one. And this dog was one of those. He penned cows. He chased the critters out of the yard at night. We called them boogers at our house. Chased the boogers off. He was with the kids. He was a playmate for the kids. He was a protector for the kids. This dog, and if you saw the farmer, you just understood the dog was with him. That was one of those kind of animals. The kids were out. The dog was with them. But we know how this story is going to kind of go. Time goes on. The kids are gone. The dog gets old. The farmer starts to get old. One day, the farmer found the dog out in the pasture, walking circles. Now, his dog had gone blind. Now, it would have been a gradual thing, and he'd noticed a little thing here and there, bumping into stuff, stumbling here and there. But the dog had finally gone blind. He took the dog to the vet, nothing they could do. But he was going to try to make it just the best that he could for the last few years for this dog. And pretty soon, the dog never left the porch anymore. It stayed. Well, the farmer would go out, and about the same time, he'd bought some yard chickens. Now, if y'all have yard chickens, then you have boogers, okay? They're going to come and get those chickens. Raccoons, skunks, possums, coyotes, house cats, whatever you want, there's going to be something. Stray dogs come to get them. And these chickens didn't last more than a week. All of them but one were eaten by raccoons and skunks because the protector couldn't protect anymore. Well, the farmer goes to work one day, and he comes back for lunch, and as he's coming back, in the shade there, right in front of the house by the porch, is the dog and the last chicken. Now, can y'all guess where that chicken was sitting? Right beside the dog. There's no fear of the dog anymore. The dog can't see to chase the chicken. But this chicken is smart. This chicken knows if I'm by the dog, guess what's not going to get me? One of these boogers. The farmer, as he came back out after eating lunch, kind of giggled to himself, well, that's a smart chicken, you know. That one might actually make it. It's too bad the dog's blind. But as he started walking, the dog got up and started walking behind him. Guess who was beside the dog? The chicken. The dog would lean against the chicken, just to where it could touch the chicken, and everywhere that chicken went, the dog went. We have a friendship, if you want to call it that, a bond has been formed. And for the rest of the time of the dog's life and the chicken's life, they were together. They were inseparable. The chicken roosted with the dog at night. The chicken ate when the dog ate. When the chicken wanted water, the dog went to water. And if they went to the barn, the chicken was beside the dog. And you had a friendship. Now, y'all are probably thinking, how could you not get through that story? I'm telling you, that one tugs on my heart. These two animals, where usually you'd think one of them is dinner, they have figured out a relationship where both of them benefited and wound up having a little bit better quality of life for the rest of the time that they were there. But that little story is about a unlikely bond or unlikely friendship, and that is what Jonathan and David had. Pretty similar to that situation. Friendship is one of the most interesting words in, I would guess, the English language, in my opinion. Robert Louis Stevenson said, "A friend is a present that you give yourself." Never thought about it in those words, but that is true. Present that you give yourself. Proverbs here in the Old Testament actually has a lot to say about friends. One, it says, a friend loves at all times. There's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And then it says, do not forsake your own friend. Now, when I say the word friend, I'm not going to have you do any activity today. I'm not going to give you any rocks or anything like that. But when I say the word friend, does somebody pop into your head? You probably have a person. First one. You say friend, friendship, you think of their face, you think of their name, maybe you think of a time that you were with that person, but we probably all have one that comes to mind. Maybe it was somebody that you grew up with. I often hear stories about somebody who's, they've been a friend since they were little, all the way up. I have a few of those. Maybe it's somebody who helped you out in a time of need that you didn't even know that you wanted to be their friend. But after you kind of got to know them a little bit, they've become a friend. Maybe it's a blood relative that's become even closer than that. I know out on Jameson Road, there's a lot of cousins. And it becomes more than just, oh, well, we're cousins and we see each other at Christmas or Thanksgiving. You're together all the time. I have one friend that Morgan and I were kind of talking about this. Since we got engaged, he's been at every major event in my life. He's shown up. Now, this is a guy who was not a close friend growing up. He became a close friend when we were in college. But the night Morgan and I got engaged, now he was dating another girl that was on the volleyball team. I was dating Morgan at the time. They lived at the one house, so we had both been over out on a date, whatever was going on that night. I proposed to Morgan. Big night. In the middle of the proposal, the front door on the porch, everything's going just right. The front door opens up, and there's my buddy Kyle. He looks at me, looks at Morgan, and then the light bulb comes on, and he slams the door. And we can hear him on the other side of the door saying, "Hey, I think he's asking her to marry him." Skip forward several years. I'd say less than that. Skip forward a few months at the wedding. Kyle's at the wedding. My firstborn, Asher, is born. Guess who's there? Kyle. Guess who changed Asher's first diaper? Kyle. Nobody asked him to. He just did it. This is Kyle. You start going through the list, and here's a friend. He's been there. Now, I use him as an example just because he's been in a lot of things. But you probably have someone in mind that's probably been a part of your life in most of the major events. Now, unfortunately, when we say that, there are those, maybe not here this morning, that when you say the word friend or friendship, no one comes to mind. Now, that's a sad story. No one comes to mind, no friends, or maybe they think, I haven't been a friend to anybody. And hopefully there'll be something this morning that maybe helps someone out if they're feeling that way. Let's change the question, though. Friendships in the Bible. Can you name any? Let's go besides Jonathan and David here. That's the obvious one. Can you name any other friendships or examples of friendships in the Bible? There you go. Main one. I think of the apostles. They were together a lot. Now, I'm sure they weren't all friends, but there had to be something in there, right? You don't usually follow people you're not friendly with. So we think the friendship was part of it. There's not a ton of examples of just name examples that we could call friends or that's spoken about in the Bible. But the Bible does speak on friendship, so we know it is important. And I think Jonathan and David did the job perfectly as far as teaching us a lesson about friendship. So if we have our best illustration with Jonathan and David, let's take a look at that this morning. As I said, we're going to see David go from shepherd to celebrity to fugitive in just a short time, but we're also going to see a real, or if you want to say a true friendship, a real friendship develop between Jonathan and David. So in 1 Samuel 17, verse 55, David has killed Goliath, and we said Saul asked Abner, whose son is this young man? And in verse 58, once David has been brought back, Saul looks at him and says, "Who are you? Whose son are you?" And he tells him, "I'm the son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite. And we said probably because Saul is about to take David out. It even says that David went home no more. He is now part of Saul's household. We know David was talented. He was a musician. That's going to be important to Saul here in the future. But at that point, when he is talking to Saul, or Saul is speaking to him, we see Jonathan being mentioned. Now you take a look. These two don't know each other. But immediately, it says that their souls were knit. They were friends. Have you ever run into somebody like that? Where you just become friends? It just clicks, right? We have the interest. We can talk to each other. We understand each other. It just makes sense. And from that point on, the friendship grows, and it's a great thing. That's what happens here. These two, on some level, realize that they relate to one another, and they become the best of friends very quickly. Kind of a interesting story just in that in itself, how fast they become friends. Chapter 18, what do we know about Jonathan in the first place? We talked about David and kind of laid out who he was as a shepherd. What do we know about Jonathan? He was righteous. We know that God was very important, and probably at this time, I ask this question, why didn't Jonathan go fight the giant? That doesn't get asked a lot. Why didn't he was there? Is he lesser? Is he more like Saul? Could be. The Bible really doesn't tell us. That would be a very valid thing to think there. Also, it could be that at this point, Jonathan might have already lost faith in his dad. Saul has, like I said, he's done everything wrong here in the past. That's why he's losing power. So maybe he had kind of been put out with his dad. Who knows? But we do know that he recognizes David and David's importance. I mean, pretty immediate. But Jonathan was righteous, so he was definitely a follower of the Lord. He was a military leader at this point. He was seasoned. He was a veteran. He commanded soldiers. We said he's Saul's heir. He's going to be king. And also, he's a favorite of the people. If you had to, we said packaging. Yesterday we talked about packaging. Jonathan fit. If we wanted a king, this is the guy. And becomes popular, but we know that that's not going to be the case. And verse 1 in chapter 18, this is where we see Jonathan and David becoming fast friends. It says, "Now it came about when David had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself." This bond was formed between two most unlikely figures, kind of like that dog and the chicken. These two were not the same. You think about David. If we were going to make a list of differences, right off the bat would be their social status, social class. The son of a king. And then you have a shepherd. Other thing is that the age difference. Not addressed a whole lot. There's a 20-year age gap between these two. When David was born, Jonathan was a soldier. I mean, he's 20 years ahead. He's seasoned. He's commanded armies. And David is this younger. Is there a problem with this? I mean, today in our world, we have to be very aware. It's obviously not the same as it was back then, but there's still concerns and worries about who our kids are with, who we're friends with. Probably have some unlikely friendships that you know of. Maybe you're friends with someone that most people would never think that you would be friends with. Does anybody here work on old tractors? Right, if you do, and you go to some of these rusty relics, tractor shows, whatever, that's one of the most interesting groups of people that you can be around. There is no age requirement to be friends if you work on old tractors. There at Sunset, we had several boys. We would always giggle because there'd be several boys, 15, 16-year-old boys, and they're hanging around with 65, 70-year-old men. And it went beyond just working on tractors. It turned into domino tournaments. It turned into pitching horseshoes and washers. And it was like being around a bunch of kindergartners all together if you got them, because the older guys were way worse than the younger guys as far as getting trouble started. But we put walls up nowadays because we have to be careful. But sometimes sometimes we may be too cautious. Now, I don't have a perfect answer for that. It's just what we have to deal with. And we have to train up our kids to be able to figure out who would be a good friend, who they need in their life, without necessarily hovering over them and lording over them and you know, busting heads every time somebody comes home. It's a tricky situation. But in this situation, very unlikely as it may be, Jonathan and David become friends. They don't miss out. So I guess what would stand out here between these two is their commitment to each other. Right off the bat, the commitment that they have. So if we're going to be a good friend, we've got to be committed. Jonathan, it says in verse 3, then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. What is a covenant? It's an agreement. Maybe at this point in time there was a ceremony that went with it. I often think back to the old Westerns. Now, some of y'all may be knowing where I'm going here. Blood brothers. Any of y'all blood brothers with somebody in here? Probably. It was a terrible idea, wasn't it? Now that we know some things. But yeah, blood brothers. You remember all the old Westerns? That's how they committed to each other. They kind of made a vow. There was going to be a true friendship. Well, what that is commitment. That's commitment. So true friendship always involves commitment, whether it's spoken or unspoken. There's an old term my grandmother used, said through thick and thin. Through thick and thin, going to be friends. Going to be committed. Yes, sir. Exactly. There was times in this world where that was law. You think about it, not that long ago either, just about 3 or 4 people ago. You break one of those agreements, and it was a killable offense in some places, depending on where you were. But yes, it's very important. And today, we oftentimes have, I don't know if people are more wishy-washy, it would be a term, or eager to backtrack. You may have heard the term crawfishing, whatever it may be, just to back out of a vow because it's easy. But we still look at a person who stands on their word. We look at them with respect if they're willing to do that, because it is a desirable trait in a friend. 1 Samuel 20, 16 and 17, we see Jonathan and David made a vow again. And if we go forward into chapter 23 and verse 16, it says the two made a covenant before the Lord. So they didn't just do this once. They did it multiple times. They revisit this to reaffirm their commitment to each other. Let each other know, hey, we haven't changed. We're still friends, and we're still the best of friends. And a good friendship needs that. We should never take a friendship for granted. And friendships need to be revitalized from time to time. Think about that. Somebody you hadn't seen in a while, been too long, right? And then Morgan gets upset at me a lot when I run into some of my friends, especially my best friend. He lives in Kansas City, so we see each other rarely. But when we do, she asks afterwards, said, well, what did y'all talk about? I don't know. Well, how's his family doing? I didn't ask. Well, what's going on with his kid? I don't know. We saw each other, and in 5 minutes, we're back to being just best friends, and that's just good enough. Now, we discuss families and things like that, but it doesn't take too long. It's just being around each other. And it doesn't take you long when you're with a friend that you haven't seen in a while to just settle back into. Just like the old, like you were with each other when you were little. I think revitalizing our friendship, whether it's with a phone call, a letter, going out to eat, showing up, surprising them, we need that. It makes you feel good when you go home, doesn't it? That person right there, I know if something goes bad, they're going to help me out. They're going to be there, just like they know that I'm going to be there for them. So think about that when we are committed and we are revitalizing our friendship. Third, after Jonathan made this a covenant with David, it says that Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. Why is that significant? I thought about this. Yeah, it's important. The bow is his calling card, isn't it? But you're talking about ceremonial clothing, swords. There weren't many swords. A lot of spears, but not a ton of swords. But also, I thought about this. David never went home. How many clothes did he pack? You know, what belongings does he have? Was Jonathan doing this because he didn't have anything? Maybe. Maybe it was a sign for others, because this was in front of people.
And the robe oftentimes would have been signified nobility.
Yes.
His robe probably wasn't like everybody
else's. Right. And so you have the son of the king really putting it out there, this is my friend. And other people are going to take note. Right, and we talked about David looking different already. So this maybe was something to kind of change the view or whatever on David.
The son of the king is going to give him his garments like that, and that's going to show significance to the people.
You bet. And everybody's going to take note.
I think that Jonathan showed David, not giving him up the position
to get the
king up. Yeah. I recognize God has appointed you, and I'm going to show you my loyalty starting right now.
Very good point. Very good point. Because we said Jonathan understood that Saul had already kind of been taken out of the picture as far as the Lord was concerned. Unselfishness is what I would choose right here. He was unselfish. Jonathan was with David. Real friends don't keep score. You're not always concerned about what this one has done or what I have done or what friends take care of each other. That's true friendship. 1 Samuel 20 and 4, Jonathan says to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." That's friendship. Also, if we have friendship, true friendship is going to be tested. If you have a friend, I guarantee you, if it hasn't been tested yet, it will be. Who knows what that may be? But friendship's tested, and the best friendships are the ones that come out of those tests. Not necessarily unscathed, but you come out and it's stronger. You've been through something. I often think about why do guys, if they've played football or baseball or something, if they've been through a little bit of a struggle, why all of a sudden do they relate so well to each other? Well, because I went through the same struggle you went through. We can tell that story. These two are going to go through it. David, we said, goes from being the shepherd to being the hero, and it doesn't take long for things to sour with Saul. 1 Samuel 18 and verse 7, we see Saul is coming back with his armies from war or from a battle, and the people are singing in triumph. And they said, Saul has killed his, and David has killed his. That's all it took, jealousy. And that jealousy quickly turns to a murderous rage almost with Saul, a murderous spirit. And every time Saul tried to kill David, it actually had the opposite effect. David became more popular, more respected. So put yourself in Jonathan's shoes for a second. He's facing a very difficult test. Am I loyal to my father or my friend? He's made a covenant. Which one is more important? It's very dangerous for Jonathan, a very dangerous position. But we do know that he chose David. Jonathan even pleads with Saul. He says, "Don't let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you." We know this first time Saul listens to him. He made a vow. He says that he shall not be put to death. Jonathan was a friend who stuck through the hard times. David stuck with Jonathan through the hard times. And as they come out of this test, their friendship is stronger. He was a friend in the worst of times. Next, we see in a friendship, we have openness. Now, this one's tough, okay? I don't like sharing feelings. I don't want to talk about my feelings with somebody. It's not something I do well. Kind of like an old boot. You know, put me in the corner, but don't bring me out in front of everybody to show me off, and definitely don't ask me how I feel about something. I'm probably going to tell you the same thing I've been saying for years. Oh, I'm fine. It'll be fine. Isn't that what we say, guys? Yeah, that's what we do. We're trained to do that. We've got to be tough, don't we? But in a friendship, you have to share. Not just things, but feelings, emotions, thoughts. There's nothing worse than sitting there and needing to say something, wanting to say something, feeling like you got to say something, and you just don't. You just eat it, and it just eats you inside, right? With a friend, you can say those things. They can say those things to you, and guess what? We don't leave with hurt feelings. We don't leave. Now, we may fight it out and argue or whatever, but when we walk away, we've actually understand each other a little better. These two have to be open. David, we see it, Saul's vow doesn't last very long. He throws a spear at him again, tries to kill him, and David has to flee. First, he goes home. That's not safe. Then he goes to Samuel because surely nobody would hurt him if he's around Samuel. That doesn't work. Saul sends assassins, three different groups, I believe, and then eventually Saul himself comes out after David. Whether Jonathan was aware or not, we assume he was, but we do know that David reaches out, or Jonathan reaches out to David so they can talk. And this is where David tells him, he says, your dad's still trying to kill me. He says, why is he trying to kill me? What have I done? And Jonathan, like I said, he's between a rock and a hard place. One, does he discredit his father by being a friend of David, or does he go after David to please his father? He's stuck. He's going to choose David, and he's going to choose what's right. But what is interesting, I guess I want you to see, is as these two are confessing their fears to each other, look in chapter 20 and verses 14 and 15. I believe there's probably a lesson in this if you sat down and did a little study. And this is the only request of David that we know of that Jonathan made. He says, and if I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? And you shall cut off the loving kindness from my house forever, and even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. Jonathan knows David's going to be the king. We can tell that right there. He knows he's going to be the king, and he's asking him, he says, are you going to get rid of me too? He said, please don't. Did David, we know he agrees, but did he keep it? Did he keep this vow, this agreement?
Yes.
How do we know that? Exactly. Yep. Now we're remembering the other parts of the story. This is where that vow took place. David agreed, and they renewed their commitment to each other. Friendship has to have openness to grow in strength. Now we wonder what Saul's reaction was to that. Is he throws a spear at him? He tries to kill him, says some bad things to him, and runs him out. And Jonathan leaves. Been very easy for Jonathan to retaliate there, but he doesn't. And last 2 points, and we'll make these very quickly. We see that their friendship, and you go through chapter 21 through chapter 23. In 1 Samuel, but we see their friendship is steadfast. It's unmovable. David is on the move. We said he'll go to Nob, and then he goes to Gath. Review. Why is Gath important? Goliath. So he's in the home of the Philistines. He's really had to go away to be safe. What's interesting, though, is after he leaves the Philistines, he goes to the wilderness. Saul's still hunting him, but he can't find him. Jonathan finds him. Jonathan sends out his guys, and they find him just like that. Jonathan even goes to meet him. Why was Jonathan able to find him, but Saul wasn't? Because they're friends. Think about that. Friends keep up. How many times has somebody told you, now I don't operate on the social media, I don't know that I'm smart enough to deal with it, but how many times do you run into people who say, well, I saw the pictures. Asher's getting so much bigger. We keep up. Used to be a letter. Now, I guess this is in my lifetime I've seen this. Used to be you got a letter. Phone call, a visit. Now that's kind of expanded with social media. We have more family further away that are able to keep up. It's not as shocking when I walk in to see a cousin who lives off two or three states over and I haven't seen them in a few years when they walk in and they were this big when I saw them last time and now they're this big. I've watched them grow up just through pictures. But we keep up. We even say that to each other. I've been keeping up with you. Now, that's kind of scary. But growing up where I did out there on Jameson Road, all of our family is within rock-throwing distance. People are going to be in your business. You learn that very early on, and not necessarily because they're being nosy, because they're looking out for you. I got a whooping by lots of people. Lots of people. It was the free reign, but I deserved every one of them, I can tell you that. I probably got away with more. But it wasn't because anybody was being mean, but they were keeping up. They were watching. They were helping raise. That's what we do when we're friends. We keep up with each other. I can tell you now, we keep up with our friends' children. We keep up with their sports. We keep up with their weddings, their children, grandchildren. That makes a good friend. Knowing somebody is looking out for you. Friendship is also encouraging. We see Jonathan and David, they do encourage each other. And we know that Jonathan came out to find David again this last time to encourage him. It says he encouraged him in God. He encouraged him in God. A good friend is optimistic, uplifting, and encouraging. It's very easy to poop on the party. That's an easy job there. It's real easy to be mopey all the time. I think of Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. It's real easy to be Eeyore. I don't have to look real hard to be miserable. That's easy. But being optimistic, that even gets on our nerves sometimes, doesn't it? Somebody's too bubbly or too just happy. It's hot outside, and the sun's shining. You know, it's harder to be optimistic. But friends build each other up, and Jonathan does that through God. And last of all, this is not going to end on the happiest note, but it is the truth of friendship. Friendship, there's going to be pain. Friendships will come to an end at some point, like all things, whether that's through death of the friend or of us. But a friendship will end. And we see David, when Jonathan, he's just gotten through fighting the Amalekites, and he says, what happened? And they tell him, Saul and Jonathan are dead. And he catches that news at a bad time. But these friends of his are gone. And if you read 2 Samuel 1, 19 through 27, that's actually a song that David has written. And he mentions Jonathan. Once again, that's good lesson material. You've got to teach a class or a devotional. But he speaks about Jonathan. He doesn't dwell on all of his sadness, but he is sad. But he celebrates Jonathan. And that is something we can all do. Let's celebrate our friends. The ones that are gone, but let's celebrate them while they're still here. Let's celebrate each other. Hopefully one of those ideas will help us as we are going through our lives and maybe to be a better friend or maybe to make new friends or maybe choosing friends. maybe one of those points will help us out. Any questions or comments as we close? Exactly. And like I said, maybe that was what each of them needed, too. Maybe that was exactly who Jonathan had been looking for. Maybe that's who he needed. And it turns out that was exactly who David needed also. It's funny how that works out, isn't it? When you get a friend. And if you go out and really examine your friendships, that best friend, you know, the one that you call when things are bad or you call when things are good, I bet you it's probably the same. A lot of similarities there. Thank you for your time.